call.
Good morning, and welcome to the analyst call of Volker Wessels for the review of the 2018 annual results. Jan De Ruiter, Chairman, Jan Van Rooyen, CFO, and Alfred Vos, COO, are present at the other side of the line. Jan De Ruiter will give a short review of the first half year. After the review, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would give the floor to Mr. De Ruiter. Go ahead, please, sir.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everybody in the room and on the other side of the line. I'm going to give a quick update on 2018, and then we'll move straight into the Q&A. First of all, I'm very happy to be able to state that our safety record has improved in 2018. The IF rate declined to 4.6, which is slightly below the target that we set for ourselves and much better than the number for 2017, which was 5.3. Creating and safeguarding a culture in which working safely is embedded is an ongoing process. We see safety as one of our core values, which is reflected in the way our employees act and feel. In 2019, we will bring an even bigger focus on safety as every accident is one too many. If we then move over to the financials, as you have seen, our net results for the year was 137 million, which is a decline of 3 million versus 2017. Our revenue came in at 5.9, and at the end of 2018, our order book was at an all-time high of 8.9 billion. Our revenue of over 5.9 billion is once again the result of the delivery of a vast number of projects throughout 2018. We are particularly proud of the construction of the new head office and distribution center for Eosta, the Princess Máxima Center in Utrecht, the children's hospital specialized in cancer treatment, the finalization of the North-South Metro line in Amsterdam, and the successful delivery of the DBFM N18 project early in 2018. Significant progress was also made on our pilot for low-temperature geothermal energy in the Netherlands. In the U.K., we completed the third phase of the Northwestern Electrification project, and we also made good progress on our West Anglia mainline project. Last but not least, we're also very pleased with the successful retender for Service Area 24 in British Columbia. Combined with yesterday's news on order intake in Alberta, I think we can agree that our North American business is in very good shape. All our divisions contributed to our 2018 EBITDA of 251 million euros, a result in line with our expectation at the time of our nine-month trading update. We recorded strong results in our construction and real estate development, energy and telecoms infrastructure, and United Kingdom segments. North America recorded a lower contribution, which was predominantly caused by weather conditions, while our German operations contributed in line with last year. Our Dutch infrastructure results declined due to the additional provision for OpenEye, as well as the ongoing repositioning of this segment, but was in line with the expectation that we communicated at the time of our trading update. Other than OpenEye and the repositioning of the Dutch infrastructure segment, we are pleased with the progress that we made in 2018. Our cash conversion remained very strong at 1.1 times as a result of our stable results and the successful reduction of our strategic working capital. Return on capital employed came in at 20.1%, which is well above the target that we set for ourselves of 18.18%. A few words on OpenEye. The construction of the world's largest sea lock at IJmuiden is progressing well and yet remains challenging. The project is now 65% complete, and over the last six months of 2018, we realized two key milestones. The smaller outer lock head was successfully immersed into its final position, and the three lock doors safely arrived in the Netherlands in the first week of December. The bigger lock head, so the interior lock head, will be immersed over the third quarter of this year. Preparations for that will start shortly. Over 2018, we increased the loss provision for the project by 39 million euros, And that brings the total provision, our share, so Volker Wessels' share, to 107 million. Over 2018, we also put 98 million of our own funds into OPA. That means that we have almost completely funded our share of the project loss. At the end of 2018, the project, as I said, was 65% complete, and we have announced that OpenAI successfully renegotiated with the banking syndicate, and they can draw again on their own resources. Rijkswaterstaat is currently in consultation with the infrastructure sector with the goal to review its tendering and procurement processes. Volker Wessels is actively participating in these discussions. We aim for an outcome which combines innovation and sustainability goals with a more balanced division of risk between client and contractor. Our opinion, that can be done by choosing the appropriate contract form. And other important outcomes must be shorter tender processes and reduced tender cost, as this currently represents a significant waste of man hours in a sector where skilled labor is scarce and difficult to come by. As a result of this changing nature of the infrastructure market, the risk-reward balance in our Dutch infrastructure segment was negatively impacted. In 2018, it was decided that a change of management of our Dutch infrastructure management was required, and a repositioning of our Dutch infrastructure business was needed. And Alfred will most likely say a few words on that in the Q&A. We strongly believe that the current contract conditions and the level of complexity of projects are not balanced, and the assessment of such has become an important element in our own tender review process. We are on track with repositioning our infrastructure segment. The necessary management positions have been changed, and the repositioning will be completed at the end of the first quarter of this year, so end of March. We have enhanced our contract management by making this a separate function within the group at top management level. And by implementing these changes, we believe that projects will be delivered on time and within budget, and it will make the sector attractive for the necessary talent. We believe that the healthy sector can innovate faster, which is a prerequisite for achieving the climate goals that have been set by the Dutch government. Then a few words on order book and cash. Our order book at the end of the year was at a historic high of 8.9 billion, which is an increase of 833 million versus the end of 2017. If you take into account the natural decline in our long-term framework contracts, the order books of all our segments increased during the year. And this is a reflection of the positive trends in the markets in which we operate. As a result of a strong overall performance and focus on working capital, our cash conversion was yet again very strong. Our net cash position increased by 69 million to 366 at the end of last year. And this is despite the loss funding of 98 million in the OpenA project. Total equity, including the results for the year, increased by 61 million to 1.2 billion. And this is the net combined result of the profitability of the company during 2018 and the dividends payments of 84 million in May and November 2018. As a consequence, our solvency increased to 32.5%. We propose to pay out a final dividend of 77 cents a share, which together with the interim dividend brings the total at 105, which is again in line with our trading update on the 9 months results. The outlook we give is that we expect our EBITDA to increase in 2019. And in a separate press release this morning, we have informed the market that we intend to make a number of changes on our supervisory board. René Kuipers will step down and will be replaced by Ilko Blok. And we are expanding the supervisory board to 6 people. And Anja Montijn will be the 6th person to join the board. These are proposals made to our shareholders on the 18th of April. So if all goes well, this will become effective on the 18th of April. Having said that, I would like to give the floor to questions. And I'll suggest that we make it a bit interchangeable between people on the phone and people in the room. So from time to time, I will ask people on the phone to pose their questions. And let's start then by somebody on the phone.
Ladies and gentlemen, we start the question and answer session. For any questions or remarks, you can press star 1. There's a question coming from Mr. Guido Nunez, Kepler Chevreux. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the questions. First question is on infra. Can you give us more detail on the fourth quarter, potentially in the order of size of restructuring charges of offsetting EBITDA generation? Second question on the North American business, can you confirm that the order that you announced yesterday of $300 million Canadian dollars is included in the order book shown in the press release? And lastly, regarding the legal dispute with the Sea-Lock door supplier, could you give a bit more detail on the progression of that? Thank you.
We'll give them all to Alfred.
I think on the financial side, on the order book,
order book,
what you communicated yesterday is a 2019 event and not included in the order book as we communicated in this morning's press release. So that's short. The first question on reorganization, there are no reorganization charges in the 2018 result, so also not for infra. So I think that answers those two questions. And on GeoZoom, I have a strong view on that, but I will let the floor to Alfred.
Thank you. I think question number two was North America.
Order book is not included.
Yeah, and also not the optional years. So what we announced is 7 + 3, so the 3 years. The optional are not included in that number either. That's all 19. In relation to GeoZoom, there is a claim that has been outgoing to GeoZoom because we are of the opinion that we should be compensated for certain contractual elements that GeoZoom did not deliver. That's currently under dispute. And we will have to wait until we finalize the legal proceedings that have been initiated by GeoZoom based on the claim that we put on their side. So this is a normal generic construction dispute that is, you know, ordinary course of business. We don't see any issues in relation to the Sea-Lock project in terms of the doors not being available. If that might be a question on your side. And as I said, the dispute itself is just a general contractual dispute with a subcontractor that we just have to wait and see what the outcome will be.
Yeah. Okay, question in the room.
Yeah, first of all, on the infrastructure division, where you're now the organization, basically moving away from the bigger projects and adjusting your project teams, can you explain how far you are in the process, what you've done so far, and what you're developing?
Well, just to be factual correct, we're not reorganizing, we're repositioning the infrastructure business, and we're not stepping away from large projects. We're stepping away from projects where the risk does not lie with the party that can influence the risk. So, you know, there is a tremendous amount of projects that are being put on tender in the market, and we are looking very careful per project where we feel that balance is in order. And that could also be that we're still looking at larger projects where that balance is in place. But currently, we've been experiencing over input and also availability of projects in the market that are more smaller and mid-sized. That simply has to do with the cycle in the market. So currently, there are also no big tenders in the market other than the ones that we've actually announced last year that we stepped away from or that we did not pursue. And they are in the category where the risk that are going to be part of the party that cannot influence them. So in that sense, we are stepping away from those projects. And currently, the availability of projects in the market is ranging in the small to mid-size. It basically means that we have to reposition, that we had to reposition the infra division, which we did. So we're on track, and that will be finished by the end of Q1. And what that means in basically in practical terms is that if you have to tender for a project that is very complex in terms of disciplines and in size, it's, you know, over $250 million plus, you typically have to mobilize 50 to 150 people to just make a proposal for the client. And it will take you 2 to 3 years to come up with such a proposal. That's also the length that the client is giving you in terms of time to come up with a proposal. And we, by the time you decide to tender on such a project, and when you have to submit a proposal to the client, you also have certain what they call dialogue phases in the process with the client to come to the final stage before you can actually, until you can submit the offer. Those projects will require a completely different setup in terms of teams, in terms of expertise, than the projects that we currently see in the market. The good news is there's a very healthy amount of projects that are already in the market that we're looking at and that are coming online in 2019 and 20. And they are more on the regional level, not always by regional governments, also sometimes issued by Rijkswaterstaat, but it's more in the mid-sized projects. We have some probably 20 to 25 projects that are coming on the market in the next 4 to 5 years. They are in the, let's say, larger project range. And we are currently in constructive discussions with the clients in that infrastructure market to come up with a better balance between, you know, where the risk in those projects should lie. And those risks are not only, you know, planning or timing of project and the time that it takes to build a project, but also, you know, force majeure elements that we cannot control, where in the regime that we have today and that we implemented earlier and strengthened more after the summer, is we're not stepping into projects where we cannot oversee the risk anymore. The clients know that. And also, if you look sector-wide in the Netherlands, you can read it in the papers. I mean, there's quite a bit of rumor around some other large infrastructure projects in the Netherlands where we're not even part of. So this is besides the CELAC. Plus, you also see that on the projects that we've, as the first party in the market, have stepped away from them, the government or the client in this case is also experiencing a very low amount of parties that are willing to calculate and to participate in those tenders. So that kind of gives you an indication of that the client also has to,
the laying of the land,
has to make some changes in their way of procurement to make sure that they remain, you know, in a healthy, competitive market that they're looking for.
That's clear. And then on OpenA, you took a couple of small additional charges in the last 2 quarters, an additional $2 million in the last quarter. So what is that related to? And in the past, you said there were also opportunities to recover part of the loss. Do you still see those opportunities going forward?
Yeah, although it is, they will most likely not happen in the same quarter at the same time. So what you will see is it is a normal construction project with 55% completion, and that's why we say we are not yet out of the risk, because there's still a lot of work to be done. The biggest milestone being the immersion of the digger in a lockhead. And what we did, we increased the provision. I'm not sure what it exactly related to. Must be a combination of factors of small stuff,
smaller issues
adding
yeah.
up. So essentially, the way we look at OpenA is that focus will be this year, or from a risk perspective, the most important element will be the immersion of the inner lockhead. I think once that is behind us, and we have done that successfully, and we have no reason to believe that it won't go successfully, we are in a different phase in the project. But it is a normal project we have decided at, when was it, to be frank and open about the project, and we continue to do that. And that's why you also see a very minor addition in Q4.
Okay, my final question is on the cash out for new property development projects. You indicated there are a couple of projects where there will be cash out this year and obviously cash in the future.
Yeah.
Can you give any indication how big that working capital
effect? Ooh, weet je dat, John? No, on balance, the aim is still to reduce the strategic working capital, and this is part of strategic working capital. I think on balance, we have now reduced since the end of 2016 over 140 million. So there's to reach that target, still 60 million to go. But we did very sizable acquisitions. For example, in your small booklet, there's a page on a project that we acquired in Delft together with Onvest. And it's a really big project with a really significant cash outflow, but that's included in the balance of our strategic working capital, because as a project developer, we are still buying land, of course. And what we have said in the past is that given where the market is now, if we have really big opportunities in the past, and big in the sense of the upside, but also in the total investment that needs to be done up front, we are more and more investing together with co-investors, where they are investing from day one and are interested in the project for the end project. And basically, that's the approach.
Okay, that's clear.
Anybody else?
Albert Barra, Kemper. I just have basically a question on clarification, because within Dutch construction and real estate development, you delivered or you sold 940 homes less compared to last year. And I was wondering how much of that is due to the large institutional investors, and how much and what kind of pressure are you seeing from the slower permitting process and potentially the ongoing pressure in the entire supply chain?
Mm-hmm. First of all, it's not a number that we actively look at. So basically, if you look at our order book in construction and real estate, then you see that the order book is increasing by over 600 million. So the market tells you that the market is very strong. That particular number of homes sold is what we develop in our own right. So we are now constructing the valley next to the A&M building over here. That will contain a lot of apartments. Those apartments will not be in those numbers, because we do that for a third party, in this particular case, OVZ.
Okay.
So essentially, what we see in general in the housing market is that permits remain an issue. Different projects can have different problems. One project could be a permit, another project could be supply, availability of labor. But in general, what you see is in the bigger cities, the availability of land, prices of land increase quite substantially, especially in Amsterdam. Aircraftstelsel is obviously not helping. If you increase aircraft substantially, then that will have a negative impact on your development potential. The split in Amsterdam, again, between social housing and houses that you can sell freely on the market is moving in favor of more social housing, less market. That has an impact. The whole discussion in this country on should we build inside the cities, or should we move outside the cities, that we believe that a combination of that should be the case.
And how high?
And obviously the height of the buildings. I think last year we came to 66,000 homes newly built in the market. That is below the target that the government sets itself of 100,000. And it's very clear, if you want to close that gap, you need to have a quicker process in permits. You need to have a quick decision on, are we allowed to build outside the bigger cities? And it would also be beneficial if we would sit down with especially in Amsterdam, to see whether we can bridge the differences that we see and that the community council sees, city council sees, on what can and what can't be done.
Specifically in the economic parameters.
Yeah.
So currently there's no active discussion between, let's say, national government and regional government.
There is a discussion. There is a discussion with the national government. So the Rijkswachtgoedbedrijf and Ministerie van Binnenlandse Zaken are in discussion. But there is no one size quick solution because it actually differs from area to area. If the permits in one part of the country are extremely flexible, but nobody wants to build there or nobody wants to live there, then obviously that doesn't help. So you need to establish where do people want to live. There we need to build. There we need to build faster. It helps if the planning is better. But if the planning is no longer the issue, then obviously the next bottleneck will become the first bottleneck. And then I think the real question is, do we have the capacity in this country to build 100,000 homes? And at the peak before the financial crisis, I believe it was 75,000. Ever since, capacity has been taken away. So it takes time. It takes time.
Okay. Then on OpenAI, I think the market wasn't generally very happy with the announcement of the commencement of the financing. Could you give us a bit of a picture of how you expect those cash flows to evolve over the next, let's say, 2-3 years of the project?
Well, if you look at our total loss today, it is 107 million, of which 98 million has been funded by Volker Wessels, and I'm talking about our shares. So basically, we have funded our entire share of the loss, and the remaining part of the funding needs to come then from the banks again.
Okay, no, but I understand. I'm trying to see whether that will fall, how that is spread, because obviously the entire chunk of finance is coming in.
There's no, let's call it refinancing in a way that part of what we have already funded will be going back to the EPC construction partners, right? So everything that the banks fund will go directly to the project, so there's no impact on basically our there's nothing coming back from the 98 million unless the loss in the project will be less in the end than 98 million, our share.
Otherwise, we take it out and you have to put it back in.
Yeah, that's a loss.
Yeah. Anybody on the phone?
Yes, sir. There is a question from Mr. Marcin Wojtal, Bank of America. Go ahead, sir.
Oh yes. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. So the first one is on the Dutch infrastructure segment. You mentioned you're looking to reposition the business and you are reviewing the business to some extent. Are you expecting to take some restructuring charges in Dutch infra in 2019? That would be my first question. And question number two, it's on your operating working capital, on your traditional working capital. It looks like it performed quite well, excluding the C-lock in 2018. But do you think it's sustainable as a percentage of sales, or perhaps was there some extraordinary impact in Q4 in terms of maybe delaying some payments to subcontractors, or it's more like a steady state underlying performance? So. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Alfred, do you want to say something on the restructuring charges
going
forward?
I don't think we expect anything in 2019.
So there's, as I said, it's a repositioning, and there's a scarcity of labor. So basically everybody who is on the payroll is quite useful nowadays, given the order book. And on working capital, the only sort of thing that is not really common in the working capital balance that we reported is that the contract balances have declined, and that's a result of the OpenAI project. If you look at the financing of the project and then deduct the loss, basically that's also the movement in our traditional working capital. So apart from the OpenAI project, our traditional working capital is stable, and we expect it to remain stable. Actually, that's quite hard work because, for example, in the United Kingdom, they have introduced what they call project bank accounts, where large customers put money in on a project bank account where you have to pay your supply chain basically directly, and then the remaining of the funds can go to your own sort of bank accounts. So that has an impact, but we, as said, are working hard to keep working capital, the traditional working capital, at the level that it is today. And of course, you see some increases, but those have to do with the increases of the volume of the business.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Back to the room.
What's happening on cost inflation?
Cost inflation, if you look at wages, then we see that cost of labor continues to go up, especially also for own staff. So if you look at the collective wage agreement for BOW in Nederland, I think you're looking at, what is it,
two and a quarter
on the 1st of Jan, and then another 3% on the 1st of July. There is a significant increase in the cost of labor. Again, well advertised in advance and taken into account, obviously, for new projects. I think in what we call staff that we rent from the market, similar, not as steep, I believe, as in the collective wage agreements, because they're always a bit behind. So that will continue, and cost of materials, we believe, will be a bit more subdued. But overall, and again, our order book is a good reflection of that. Our services are in high demand, and that obviously has an impact. The good news, it's very visible, and that means that it is easier to explain to any client. Who else? Bill.
Yeah, Phil Gert, ABN AMRO. I have a follow-up question on the infrastructure division, Alfred. Because in Q3, I think it was Q3, you announced the restructuring or repositioning. Let me go. But it was also the segment where you were least hit, of course, given the OpenAI losses. But I believe you also mentioned just other projects as well, regional. Level. And now, if I listen to you, then it feels like actually the underlying basis, you're actually quite happy with. It's performing well. And that's actually my question. Is that indeed the case? Is it so on the underlying basis, except for the...
I see underlying potential. I'm not happy with how Infra has performed over... the recent past, and I think the numbers speak for themselves. But if you look at, and this is always the case when you look at a segment in the business that is not performing in line with the expectations, is what is the potential?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're repositioning instead of reorganizing. And of course, it's all about what you add as an explanation of those words. But what I mean with repositioning is we're not letting go large amounts of people. We're not cutting certain divisions in different pieces or looking at cost that have been influencing the business in the wrong manner. What we've seen is in actually 1 year a number of projects with a inadequate balance of risk coming to the market where you have hundreds of people set up to approach and service the clients, and in this case there's only one client, is the government in this country, because we're talking about infrastructure and metals, of course, and to are ready to approach those projects, but we are not in the position to influence the rules of that game, you know. So you just have to take these tenders as they come. And when you then look at the details of those projects, it was, and we've explained that in the past as well, we are very harsh in terms of the risk that we want and that we don't want. And in 18, it became very clear that the few projects that were still, in the pipeline to be tenders, and the ones are, you know, like an A15 or an A9, it was very clear that we are not going to be part of the second phases of those projects, because we also qualified for those projects as well to look at, because you need to qualify to get the documentation to tenders. So we looked at that carefully and said, you know, this is not our cup of tea. So by doing that, you're dealing with, you know, 5,000 people in an infrastructure group that part of that 5,000 people are all geared up towards those type of projects, because these are not small. If you go to Eimond, there are 350 people just sitting on the project site. 350 people. First of all, there are people, so we care. We want them to be taken care of. Second of all, we need to have a project for them to work on. So then the good news, because now I'm getting to your point, is if you then look at the tender pipeline, and there are three categories. There are categories, you know, the super projects, the big ones that are, let's say, 250 million plus. We're going to have about 20 to 25 coming online in the next 4 or 5 years, as I just mentioned. Give or take a few quarters, but that's approximately the time frame. And we see on the local level a very healthy in-stream of projects coming in terms of renovation of bridges, in terms of renovation of what we call in the Netherlands N roads. So these are not the major highways, but the smaller provincial roads that are being doubled, or they have to be renovated. That is exactly the type of work that we like. We also like the big ones, only under the condition that the risk is spread in the right way. But the projects between 20 to 80 million, 100 million is exactly the right setup, where I can still work with the same people that are also active on the larger projects, because they also feel from a career and from an intelligence perspective, they want to be challenged. So somebody that has gone to, you know, Wageningen or Delft, to the major universities, that is looking for, you know, major water construction projects, you know, I cannot just take them and put them on a little roundabout in Purmerend, because they won't get the excitement and they will leave the business. So the good news is that the content and the scope of the smaller projects are still challenging, but they fit right in, let's say, the risk profile that we're looking for. And because of our fine maized infrastructure that we have as Volker Wessels, because we are spread through the country, through all kinds of different setups in the provinces, we are very well equipped to take those projects on and to service them with the same people, but in a different setup. And that's what I mean with the repositioning. So we used to have an office where 300 people were sitting there just cranking out, you know, the big tenders. That office now is a little bit smaller. And we have, let's say, the 300-400 people there sitting in 15 different teams, or smaller teams, pitching for the, you know, 20 to 80 million. So don't get me wrong. We're still looking at the larger ones, but I don't see the ones right now that I like. And then at the same time, I see a very healthy, you know, understream of projects that are coming online. So the outlook is actually pretty good in terms of you know, the work that's coming to the market.
Okay, can I just ask one follow-up? So if I look, if I'm correct for OpenEye, then the profit margin was 4% this year.
For
infra.
61 million over once before. So that's 6. That's 4. Yeah.
4%. So... I don't know whether you're willing to comment on that, but what do you have in mind then as potential? And is it also true that maybe in terms of upside, if compared to if you execute a large project really well, the upside might be a bit less with a mid-sized project, but the predictability is much better? But maybe just from a margin perspective, so how much do you see in terms of potential from that 4% if you take that as a base? I don't know if you want to comment on that.
I think what we have said is the following. We are not going to make a forward-looking statement specifically on infra. You're not going to be surprised. As we have said in the past, we believe that we can get infra back to its original margins.
and those are higher than 4% given time. And that's what we are working on. We are not going to give you a specific year or quarter when that will be realized. Part of that is also depending on how our discussions with Rijkswaterstaat are evolving. Means is that the consultation that Rijkswaterstaat is currently conducting is done at the request of Rijkswaterstaat. We obviously are very happy that they are doing it, but they have invited the sector to come and talk to them and to figure out how we can better balance risk and how we can solve the situation that basically the sector is financially not healthy enough. Let's put it like that. I think that the fact that they see that they also have a problem, because if you take a bit of a helicopter view, then Volker Wessels has one difficult project. It's called OpenAI. If I read the papers and if I were to believe everything to be true that is being written in the papers, then Rijkswaterstaat has many more headache projects. And I guess that the only constant factor in all those problem projects is that the contract form that we are currently using is, in our view, the root cause of where all these issues are coming from.
I also, the contract conditions.
The contract conditions. Yeah. Now, I believe that, and I've said that many times before, that nobody wins in a bad project. You can obviously, if you're very cynical, you can argue that the state of the Netherlands is purchasing a sea lock which is 200 million cheaper than the actual cost price of the sea lock. I honestly believe that that's not their goal. They would prefer to be an organization totally in control, delivering difficult projects within budgets, within time. Now, the discussions that we are now having are in that respect very important. We want to have a reduction of the tender cost. We want to have much quicker selection, and those obviously go hand in hand, and we want to have a much better balance in risk. To give you an interesting example, the reason that we walked away from the A15 is that the risk of high water level of the river Waal, I believe, was for the construction companies, combined with a very tight planning. Now, there's a lot of things that we can influence. There's a lot of things that we can influence, but the last time I looked, we did not influence high water levels in a particular river in the Netherlands. So I said, listen, that doesn't make any sense. And it's also not a risk that Rijkswaterstaat can influence. It is just a risk that society has. Basta. Now, and therefore, I think if society is the main beneficiary of that, that road extension, then society should bear that risk, and society is represented by Rijkswaterstaat. Now, that debate we need to have. We are more than happy to take risk that we can influence the outcome of, provided that we can price it in an appropriate way. McKinsey has written a report on the back of which the consultation is now taking place, and if you read the report, I think it's publicly available.
And we've given the input.
Yeah, exactly, and we have given input on that. Split contracts go for a co-creation in the design phase. And the reason why that is very important is that at least you collectively own the project. Then at a given moment in time when the whole thing is frozen, you can do the pricing, because then nothing changes. You know exactly what you need to do, etc. Right now, you are asked to price a project where it is a moving target, because changes keep coming in. Because every time that you believe, okay, this is it, we have priced it, and as Alfred said, you've got truckloads of people looking at that, the goalposts have changed again. That should stop. That should stop. Now, and I'm convinced that if you have a project that you co-created and you co-own the design, and 2 years down the road you have a problem because you overlooked collectively something in the design, it's going to be resolved in a different way because you're all responsible. Then in a situation where one party can look at the other and say, okay, this is your problem, give me a call when you're ready, and by the way, all the cost is yours. Now, this works perfectly all right in our UK business, because we do a billion turnover in infra in the UK. And as you have seen, our UK results, we believe, are exceptionally good. 20% increase in EBITDA. We are not being hampered by Brexit or whatever. It's, that business is moving along really, really nicely. I think that Rijkswaterstaat is now looking at contract forms that are used in Norway, which are quite similar to the ones in the UK, two-phase contracts, they call it. I believe we are making steps in the right direction. At the same time, as they say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, so the future will tell. But we are hopeful and optimistic that given the fact that the selectivity of contractors is increasing substantially, that we will see change. And that will help, obviously, our infra division going forward. The sooner we see that change, I guess the shorter time frame for us to restore it to its historical profitability levels.
May I have one more question? On the North American business, profitability was impacted by unusual weather conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect, or is there a probability that you can actually have some additional volumes this year, provided the weather conditions are normal? That's like a kind of catch-up work that you lost out last year?
Well, the you know, it's again, it's all dependent on you know, weather in certain parts of our business. There's always a good and a bad element to when this happens. If the bad element is that you're missing a month, and in this case, actually 2 months of production. The good news is that you have a pretty solid carryover because the work at hand and in the order book could simply not be executed in September and October. Actually, we had a couple of good months in November, but by the time you get started up again, you lose a lot of efficiency, and that is not very good for the margin. So that also creates some of the margin compression. But, you know, we're starting with a solid order book. So if we're going to have a good run this year in terms of weather, I think we're pretty, you know, comfortable that the North American business will deliver conform plan. Yeah.
Yet in September, it was snowing in Calgary. And also for Canadian standard, that was pretty early.
Yeah,
in there.
At 35 centimeters, I mean, it was not just snow. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere.
And I think that so basically, in an ideal situation, you start producing in, say, May, April, and that you do it all the way up to November, and then overnight there should be a meter of snow.
Yeah, and what's the added complexity is that you have to stop and start again,
yeah.
But at one moment you have to decide whether or not to send basically part of your crew back to Newfoundland, because that's where they live in the winter. And so then you have to sort of choose.
You have to be a weatherman.
In the high season, we're working with somewhere between 700 and 900 staff.
Yeah.
And as Jan said, you know, many of them come from the East Coast.
Yeah.
And then you fly them back, and the weather starts to increase. You know you're lacking resources because in the down season we only have 150 to 250 people on the payroll. The other element besides the weather was that the recovery in Fort McMurray is going somewhat slower than expected after the wildfires. You know that
2016.
Yeah, that community is really restoring itself far slower than they expected at that time. So, but we'll get there. And when the weather's good, we should be okay this year in North America.
Is there anybody on the phone?
Yes, there is a question coming up from Mr. Xavier Binedo, Exane. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Just a follow-up on OpenAG. So if I understood correctly on what you said, is that in the absence of further provisions on P&L, the cash outflow corresponds to yourself will be zero in the rest of the contract? That is the first question. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. So the total loss our share is 107 million, 107. So far we have funded 89 million. 98 million, 98. So there's still 9 million to be funded over the course of the project.
Okay, yes, sure, understood. And the last one is there. any other cash outflow apart from the CapEx, taxes, and the interest rates that we should consider for 2019 cash flow?
No, not 19. Not for 19, unless we do a more bolt-on acquisitions. But what we do will see in 2019 is that our investments will go up, because as communicated the course of yesterday, we have won three large road maintenance contracts, and there's quite an expansion there in the contract. So we have to invest far more than the average investment in our Canadian business for road maintenance.
But that is good news, Xavier, because that underpins future business.
Yeah.
Sure. And how much is that investment?
I think it's around 10 to 20 million euros in addition to the normal level of investment.
Okay, great. And the last one, I remember a conversation with you that you said that you're not a bank, and with this cash flow generation and the net cash position and the prospect for 2019 in the absence of further OpenAG, you are starting to build in quite a nice cash net cash position. Are you prioritizing in the board bolt-on M&A, or is it dividend your priorities? Well, can you give us some color on that sense, please?
Yes. We reiterate that we are not a bank. Our solvency is 32.5%, so it is moving up. We have basically released close to 140 million out of our strategic working capital since the IPO. Clearly, the plan was not to put 100 million of that into a CLOC, but that happened. So part of that release has gone into the funding of OpenA and going forward. And the target for the reduction in strategic working capital was increased from 100 to 200 million over the summer of last year. The outcome remains the same. If we see that our free cash flow continues to very good and the release of the strategic working capital continues as planned, then we will definitely investigate other uses than putting it on the balance sheet. And those other uses are indeed bolt-on acquisitions, share buybacks, or increase of dividends, or a combination thereof. But we have decided not to do that as yet, given the fact that a large part of the release went into the CLOC, and as we discussed before, I think that it is wise to hit the third milestone of the CLOC project, which is the immersion of the inner lock header.
Crystal clear. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anybody else on the phone?
Yes, sir. Mr. Guido Nunez, Kepler Cheuvreux. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks. Most of my question has just been answered in Javier's question, but maybe a follow-up on that. You just said something about the third milestone for the CLOC when answering the question about cash distribution. Does this mean that you are reluctant to step up cash distribution before the second caisson is fully sunk into the ground? And if I remember correctly, that's supposed to be done by the end of Q3.
No, I think it's a combination of two factors. We are in the process of releasing the second 100 million of our 200 million goal. I think we did 40 million of that, so we still have roughly 60 million to go. So before you can hand out, you need to have it in the bank account. So that's what we are working on. And clearly, the third milestone, if the third milestone is successfully completed, and again, we have no reason to believe that we will not be successful there, that obviously makes the decision then we are further down in the time and we have more release realized. We have less risk going forward, in my opinion, and that makes it a better moment in time to discuss what to do with the then excess cash. So I believe that we are prudent.
All right, thanks.
Okay. not in the camera. Anybody in the room?
Yeah. Mark, basically, yeah, dear. First question about raw materials, because in the market here, the raw materials have increased sharply. When I look at your P&L account, then I do see a nice step up in revenues, but raw materials went down, also in absolute terms. Could you explain that?
It's a combination of what you buy directly as raw materials and what you buy basically indirectly as raw materials by your subcontractors. Right, so it's... I think it's very difficult from a sort of look at an average or whatever. But you've been you said something about raw materials.
Yeah, we see that both in labor and both in raw materials, you see prices increase. And in terms of raw materials, what we see is less significant than in the past, but there's still inflation. The good news is that it is very, very visible. And remember that back in 2017, we stated that there was some margin pressure because raw materials were going up and we were still executing contracts which we had agreed upon in 2014, 2015. Right now, although nobody likes it, it is a fact that everybody sees, and that makes it on a relative basis easier to pass on those price increases to your end investor or your end buyers. And we also see that property prices continue to rise. That's also leveling off, which I believe is probably good news, that the whole market becomes into a new equilibrium, albeit be it at a higher level than, say, 3 or 4 years ago.
Then you make two acquisitions. Could you inform us how much Jules has contributed to the P&L, and could you give also a bit more information about the PJ Davidson you acquired?
Yeah, and we can give you that, but that would mean that we are going to give contributions of individual companies, which we don't. So what we say is that both will contribute to our EBITDA results going forward. Jules got into the business at the end of September. Very happy with the acquisition. It allows us to also work on the high voltage networks and on the further electrification of the Netherlands. Order book, very, very strong. PJ Davidson is an asset transaction that we closed, I believe, at the end of November. So that has hardly hit the books of the UK in 2018. And that's a slip form concrete manufacturer. And that will start, well, that it contributed a little bit in 2018, but will obviously for the first full year impact our UK operations in 2018.
But besides telling something about profitability, I was more looking for turnover contribution of these businesses.
Oh, okay. I don't even have the numbers. Smallish.
15 million
for PJ Davidson.
Because it's partially for the year.
Total number.
Yeah.
Combined number.
But that is are we talking the profit contribution or the turnover contribution
turnover,
for 2018?
15 million. Yeah.
For both.
Both. Combined.
It's on page 145 of our annual report. It will be published next Monday.
Okay. All right.
And then lastly. You had a contribution from the divestment of three financial assets in three operating projects. Last year, you also had a contribution, stiff contribution from A1 and A9. Was there something else which really contributed to the results this year? Like these?
Well, the claim we lost in construction and real estate. It's a arbitration which we lost, and that costed Devrio for construction and real estate 10 million. So we took a provision that we are appealing the decision of the arbitration. And obviously, if we get it right this time, then that money should be coming back. But there was a big negative impact on the results of construction and real estate development. Other than that, any significant...
I think the accountant defines materiality at 15 million euros. I don't think that there are any individual transactions or projects that contributed more than 15 million euros to the Volkswagen P&L.
So
much more normal course of business in 2018 relative to 2017.
Correct.
Is still anybody on the phone?
At the moment, there are no further questions, sir.
Are there further questions in the room? Philip?
Yes, I have two last questions. First of all, on the IFRS 16 change, I'm not completely up to speed with everything that the impact, but you disclose at least the impact on EBITDA. I was also wondering if there are any impact to be expected on the ratios, because also there's an asset and a liability impact. But for example, on solvency and your net debt, is that going to change as well, or your leverage ratio and net debt?
If you look at solvency and you do the math, because we disclosed that the balance sheet will be 220 to 240 million longer.
Yeah.
And if you do the math, then our solvency will decline by 2% points. So it would have been around 30.5 instead of 32.5.
Yeah, and it doesn't have an impact on your net debt?
Not in basically our covenants. Not sure if it's not included in the covenants calculation. So.
And on your reporting net debt in the end?
Not sure, actually. It will be.
There will be an impact.
Yeah. Okay. But that's the same amount, right?
The same amount.
Debt. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then my last question is...
It's not already debt, but it was very...
Okay. Then my last question is on the statement that you make on Brexit and UK. I mean, I understand that it's always that can also just be a cautious statement because nobody knows what's going to happen. But are there what scenarios or areas where you think that you that are most at risk in your business from a possible no deal Brexit?
Yeah, I think that what we did is, it's always. Think like Roald Dahl, always expect the unexpected, but it's pretty difficult to figure it out. So what we did do is look at the supply chain and is there building materials coming from the continent or from the Republic of Ireland that are time critical, and if it gets held up in customs, will that delay projects? Now, I think that the whole chain in the UK has done that, is stocking up in order to prevent that from happening. We are pretty much in the infrastructure business, so you could argue, similar to what we have seen in the financial crisis in the Netherlands, if there is going to be a significant hiccup in the British economy, it could well be that the British government continues to spend on infrastructure in order to keep it going. And that's what we see right now. There is no delay in projects, and the pipeline that we track on future projects is increasing. So far, no immediate consequences. Labor, as John points out, could be an issue, it has been an issue, clearly. What we understand is that roughly 20% of people in the construction market in the UK are coming from Europe, Eastern Europe. If for whatever reason that becomes a significant bottleneck because of these people no longer allowed to freely move in and out, yes, then there will be an issue.
For the whole industry.
And that will affect the entire construction industry, and it will affect even more the NHS.
Yeah.
So by the end of the day, what we say is so far Brexit is not impact our business in a negative way. It's a big unknown. I am eternally optimistic and believing that people will not do stupid things. This will take the time it has been given, which means that if there is a solution, it will always be 1 minute before the 29th of March, 11 o'clock in the evening, in my book. It takes the time you give it, no sooner, no later. So we will see. We will see. But I do know for a fact is that on the 30th of March, the sun will rise again. The UK will still be there. And it
will
basically settle itself.
We'll all still be paying taxes.
And we'll still be paying taxes. So those are the certainties in life. So, it is, but given the fact that you come out with your results, you appreciate that we have to say it is a risk.
Thank you.
Then you say that difficult to assess how, when, which effect, indirect, third line. Okay, anybody else? Yes.
Yes, one question. Given industrialization, digitalization, or prefab, where are you on that stage and how might it help you to do better cost prices?
We're all front runners in that respect, right? Jan, digitization, can you say a few words on that?
Yeah, there's a lot happening. I think digitization and industrialization basically go hand in hand, right? So we are investing quite a significant amount, have already done so in 2019 and will, in 18, and will also do that in 2019 in basically our prefab factories. And so if you look at our CAPEX, it's in the presentation on page 26, then you can actually see that our CAPEX is already quite significantly increasing, not on a net basis, because we are also carefully looking at other assets that we have on the balance sheet that are not contributing, that we are selling off. And in 2018, it was quite significant, but we are already investing more and more in our prefab factories. And digitization, it's ongoing. Varies also per segment within Volker Vessels. I think in some segments we are working on open source, and I think our front runners, in others we are lagging behind a little bit, so varies.
I think what you see in this business is that there is this idea that the construction sector is not particularly innovative and that labor productivity is lagging the automotive sector. That is a typical McKinsey point of view. And innovation does take place, but it normally takes place in projects. So a good example is the immersion of this lockhead in Amuiden. It has been done for the first time ever on this planet by not having a single living person under the structure when it was coming down. So this was basically done by three people with joysticks outside who with robots put the whole thing 17 meters down. So there is a lot of progress through these projects. Labor productivity is obviously one thing, which in my book is strongly related with the fact if you have a repetitive process, if you build 8,000 Audi A, whatever, fives a day, and you put all the extras in, but you ask the dealer only to switch them on if and when the client has paid for that, that's a repetitive process. And if you look at housing construction, for instance, Morgan Wallen, that's repetitive. So there you see those benefits. We're also building next to our head office in Amersfoort at Rijkscollectiecentrum, where we will store excessive paintings or excess art that the Dutch government owns or the Rijksmuseum owns. That's one in a kind. That's one in a kind. And that makes it a little bit different. So I think it is far more innovative in the sector than what you. So we have stories to tell. That's why we also hired a vlogger. So you see on our website that we will post vlogs, and we are very proud of the project, but we have to tell the stories and get people more interested in that. So work to be done.
What would you see as a logical range for, let's say, managing cost price reduction due to prefabrication, industrialization? Or is it like that? It depends, of course, on the market.
Yeah, well, listen, there is a study out of McKinsey that I got presented, a study out of 2017, and they believe collectively that the margin in the construction sector could go as high as 30% real. My advice to the guy who presented it to me was that he should buy a construction company immediately. Because if you can do that, you should do it. Honestly, not that high, because if that were to happen, then probably you have to give back quite a lot to the market as well. But can we do much better than the 4-5% that we see right now? The answer is yes. If it will lead to a reduction in failure costs, which we also have, and we probably have less than average, but we still have, that will substantially help. If we do 10 projects less, we will have we see a notable impact on our net profit. You look, if we do one project less, our net profit would have been 166. Now, clearly, what we need to do is to ensure that we sail around those icebergs of that now, with contract management, do not accept the risk that a river somewhere in this country is going to flood, and that as a consequence of that, you cannot construct for the next 6 weeks, on the back of which you get a delay, on the back of which you have to pay. And the sailing of the lock doors from Korea to Rotterdam is one thing. And it took a little bit longer for those doors. If the doors had been later, because of weather conditions, because then the ship had to go around the storm, etc., which it didn't happen, it would have been our risk.
But it took more time to get the door, almost the same time, to get the doors from Korea to Rotterdam, than from Rotterdam to
Amsterdam.
Because
of strong wind.
The weather conditions. Because we couldn't get the doors off with the cranes because it was very strong winds in November and December. And in the current contract regime, it's all cost. So if it blows hard outside, that means that you cannot recover it from the client, and that has to stop. And that has stopped. So that's an important element. We see that, as I said, in certain contracts still not being managed, and those are contracts but not pursued.
Anybody else, either in the room or on the phone? Operator, is there anybody on the phone?
No questions at the phone, sir.
All right. Then I would like to conclude by thanking everybody for taking their time, also on the phone. Thank you very much in the room, and we'll hope to see you all soon, which will probably be August, right? And a call in May on the first quarter. Thank you very much, operator.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Volker Wessels event call. Thank you for attending, and you may disconnect your line now.